You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Josh, welcome to the show. As always happens, we record like a little pre-recording episode, so I figured we should hit record and jump into it.
Let's do it.
Well, I think you hopped on my radar probably 1 or 2 months ago now at this point. You were on a plane giving a first-person recount of what you had just experienced on a road trip in Europe, particularly doing some diligence on what's happening on the gold markets. And obviously that has been a big topic in some of the more obscure areas of FinTwit and financial Twitter and people covering finance, really not getting much tick in the mainstream, but there's something happening in the gold markets. And you're somebody who I've been following for a few months now, and it seems like you have a very good pulse on what is actually happening. A lot of people have theories, but you were, again, on the ground in Europe. So I think starting there with that road trip, what you observed, what you're comfortable disclosing about what you observed, and how you would describe the mechanics of what's been happening with this flow of gold into the U.S.
Yeah, so I've been involved in the metals space for 20-something years now. So I did corporate risk management for really huge gold and silver and copper mining companies. So worked at, you know, the C-suite level, just managing, you know, mega billion-dollar companies, and fell in love with the metal space, and then started what's now Scottsdale Mint, 16 and a half years ago, roughly. So been in the space a lot of times. So we now, that my company manufactures and produces legal tender gold and silver coins for roughly 20 foreign governments, central banks. We do private bank work. So some of the private banks, you walk into a bank branch, let's say in Canada, and you want to buy a silver bar, it's actually made right here in Casper, Wyoming. So I do that and then supply hundreds of wholesalers all around the world. So I really see quite a bit of things. And then we also have I have a new vaulting operation that's at an institutional level grade here in Wyoming. And so I see a lot of stuff, and we're going to have the largest independent arm company is going to be leasing space for me in my building just to service my customers. This is kind of like, you know, Casper, Wyoming is a little bit like kind of building a hotel in the middle of nowhere, and suddenly Avis wants to put in a rental car agency there, which is wonderful. So we are moving a lot of physical gold in and out of the U.S. We work with a lot of the refineries. We're doing the finished products, so we see it all. So I know the transport guys, and I think you're right. I was flying back, I think it was February 2nd. I think I had my X account for 2 weeks at that point. So even though I've been in the space a long time, never really vocalized much. And I actually had someone that was listening to me talk about what I was seeing in the market, and they go, "Can you put that on camera?" And so I was like, why don't I just share what I'm seeing? And I think, I don't know if I was the first person to talk about the insane amount of gold shipping over, but I think I might've been one of the first to break it, at least on a large level. And there was one of the weekends, I think it was we had more than 5 million views between a number of channels. So yeah, I think it was quite an interesting time to see what was going on. And yeah, you're right. I was meeting with some governments and some big refineries, some banks, wholesalers, and I'm like, this amount of gold, no one on their own can move this amount. And it was mind-boggling. As you heard about that process of material flying, you know, and it was happening, you know, before Christmas. And so, you know, and I'm just listening, and it's coming from multiple carriers, and I'm like, this is really big. And so what is going on? And I think it kind of goes back to a couple years ago. Started with the Ukraine war, what the BRICS nations are doing. And there's been a very, very kind of covert movement of physical metal, really primarily China, is what's been happening for a while. And now to see it come to the United States, it was like, wait a minute, this is pretty big. This is pretty big. And, you know, at at that level too, because it's disrupting the marketplace. So when you disrupt the commodity market, you disrupt the Bank of England, which is the settlement. That's where, after World War II, a lot of the war debts were settled. A lot of people don't realize gold is still used. It's pledged for with the World Bank. It's pledged for, like, when you're, you know, the World Bank is giving loans to countries, that's all being done with gold backing. And so all this gold was there, and suddenly it's all moving around, and you're disrupting their delays, their feeling. If you're a private investor, as I just wrap my head around all this, I'm like, you can't do that. So the Hunt brothers tried to do it silver in 1980, and then George Soros in the early 90s, and then Warren Buffett in the late 90s. And every time those guys got a knock on the door, right? And they had to liquidate. And actually, Warren Buffett's the last one turned in the silver ETF. And so when you do this at the level of gold, who's allowed to do this? And to me, it feels truly like it's the US government.
Mm-hmm. And so to give everybody a perspective of how this physical bullion market typically works, the big players that have popped in to the scene, or at least my observation of the scene, you have three that people are mainly talking about. The LBMA, the Bank of England, and then COMEX over here in the United States. And there's sort of this interplay between the three that is sending off alarm bells. And so how do they interact with each other or at all?
Yeah, so London has literally been, you know, since World War II, the kind of the headquarters for gold throughout the world. So when central banks are buying and selling gold, a lot of it is settled and held in the at the Bank of England. And the London Bullion Market Association is just kind of a standard. Think of that. That's more institutional level, right? You're more banks, refineries are delivering in and out. And then they enter in the US market, it's the COMEX. And so, you know, oftentimes people don't realize this, but gold and silver is transported over continents to take tiny ARPs back and forth. So oftentimes banks will go short a futures contract, right, in the US. And if there's an arbitrage to be had, and then they buy the physical metal somewhere in the world, whether that's London, Korea, somewhere else. And that metal comes in, they deliver in, and they take a small spread. Well, when those spreads suddenly went to, like, what I call epic, like, all the bullion banks are making huge, huge money, unless they're caught on the wrong side of another trade or something. But on that EFP, that exchange for physical premium, you don't see that. I'd say the only time I've seen that in my 20 plus years was COVID. And that was when the refineries in Switzerland all shut down. Mines shut down the world. So there was huge shortages of gold and silver. So the banks basically said, hey, if you want to exchange your paper contract for the real thing, you got to pay up. And instead of paying maybe pennies per ounce, and I think we've seen this EFP over the last 3 months has been averaging 30 cents to $1.15 on silver. And gold has been averaging $15 to maybe as much as maybe $65 an ounce. So we're talking huge money. So all these banks have to do is find the metal. You know, they short the market on the COMEX and they deliver it in. And so that movement was originally being thought that it was just maybe a tariff risk, right? So is Trump going to tariff gold and silver? That was kind of what we were thinking back in December. And then when I'm literally getting back, it's February 2nd, I'm like, this can't be. This has got to be something bigger than this. So, and I think we're starting to see that, you know, we haven't really had, you know, tariffs haven't really fully come into to play in terms of what's going to happen, right? You know, Mexico and Canada got essentially on most products, got another 30, you know, multiple extensions. So we don't really know, but yet the EFP still exists. It's moderated a little bit, like in the last week, but it's still higher. You know, even today, you know, it's still up above average. So something really is big. So all these institutions are they moving metal, and oftentimes most of the stuff sits there. So there's always been concern of, like, has it been leased out? Has it been, you know, because banks do like to utilize, and governments, they lease their gold out. And so why do they do that? And so at a very sophisticated level, you can lease it out, you know, with someone with large credit, and you can earn a small yield on it. So this is what the banks do. JP Morgan is the largest holder of silvers in the world. And then they have their own gold and silver vaults literally next door to the Fed in New York. So it's a very interesting business of how physical metal really kind of makes the world work. I feel like we've been slow walked into the idea that, you know, I don't think we're educated in the school system, that gold is still part of our society, even though we're not gold backed the way we used to be. And Richard Nixon, just over 50 years ago, cut us off. But it is still the underpinning of central banks. It's the only thing on their central bank balance sheets is gold outside of their own fiat currency. So I know people are talking about, you know, how Bitcoin's going to come into play. But as of right now, right, it's governments that are talking about it. And even Michael Saylor's really kind of focused on the U.S. government. Well, does the U.S. government really control the Federal Reserve? And I think we kind of got our answer. Powell said Trump can't fire me, right? And so what does that mean? They're a private bank. And a lot of people don't realize the U.S. Fed, they pretty much are, they manage all the other central banks, or the majority of them, around the world. So they're all this is Bank for International Settlements. This is these, and I'd say at a high level, if you watch Game of Thrones and you watch the kings and queens and who's running the show, but then they have to go to the Iron Bank. And when they walk into that room, right, you humble yourself. And then the Iron Bank is financing both sides of the war. And this has been going on. And it's really based off of, you know, some famous names that you've heard about, right? The Rothschilds have financed. They going back to Napoleon. So it's quite interesting to see it now kind of coming into the forefront. And then, you know, you had Elon Musk out of nowhere tweet or post it on X. Hey, surely the U.S. gold at Fort Knox is audited every year, right? And that kind of kicked off a whole nother thing going, well, does the U.S. have its gold or not? Is that maybe why the gold's coming into the U.S.? Because we're auditing everything, right? So USAID, right? Everything within government's being audited. So is it possible that they already knew, maybe from Trump's first term, that maybe some of the gold had been rehypothecated, leased out, sent somewhere else? And, you know, what do they say about property? Was it 9/10 of the law is physical ownership? So if there is dual counting, they're repatriating. So they're saying, hey, I want all these assets in my jurisdiction. So we're starting to see. So China has been saying, I want it in my jurisdiction. If we go back in time, Venezuela said, we want our gold back, Bank of England. And they said, nope. And it's being held there. I think it's somewhere in the world courts. Germany took, I think, 8 years to get their gold out of England. So this is one of those things like, you know, it feels better when it just is here on your own turf. And also, if you look at history, world conflicts, and I would say we're entering the zone. I realize Trump's trying to create some peace here, but maybe it doesn't. Oftentimes, gold is always it moves in advance of war. And if not, like the French had to do, you know, if you want a fun story, read about how the French moved the gold out in the middle of the night on the ships, you know, to get it out before the Germans were coming in. So, you know, history, I don't like to say history often, it doesn't repeat, but often rhymes, but it kind of does. So most of us have never lived through anything like this. There's some sort of, you know, the system's broken that we're currently in. This, you know, Keynesian experiment is probably a good term, right? And this is, I would say, the rise of both Bitcoin over the last number of years, you know, was really rooted in a lot of these structural problems in finance and the distrust of politicians, the just distrust of government. And here we are kind of, you know, obviously, and now, you know, Bitcoin has morphed into a number of reasons of why to own it. And now it's, you know, it's digital gold. But you're still seeing physical gold. It's really not going away. And you and I were talking the other day, I'm not Peter Schiff. So I'm, you know, Peter Schiff loves to hate on Bitcoin. And I am one that says I will embrace things that do well. So yes, I'm a very much a classical assets. That's what's in my business. But I've owned Bitcoin longer than Michael Saylor has. I've been holding it on some of the balance sheets of my private companies, like a treasury asset, for longer than Michael Saylor has. I just don't do the debt thing that he does. But I'm a big fan of have abundance. So, you know, obviously, you know, the term maxi, you know, you're either in the club or you're out of the club. I can embrace all those guys. And in fact, a lot of my, you know, through the years, Scott Stowe Mint, a lot of my larger customers have become friends, have been original OG Bitcoin guys from, I'm talking, you know, dollar, dollar up. I've got a lot of people that then rotated and they sacrificed for Ethereum Genesis day one. And these guys, they're mega billionaires. These guys are always clipping a little bit off the table and they go into physical gold and silver. So they may not tell the public that, but that's what I see. And this is at the highest levels. This is what the family offices do. And, you know, I don't think we need the animosity between, you know, the, let's say, you know, Bitcoin or gold. I mean, Michael Saylor's always trying to attack it. And I understand he's trying to attack the economic energy. But let's think for a minute, how much capital is just in fiat, right? All the derivatives and it's just fluff. And the government could just print all the money at once and buy anything at once, right? That's how it works. Why do we have to sell gold to buy Bitcoin, right? You could own both. Be dominate both. And I realize he's, you know, the play is you're going to bankrupt everyone else that's buying gold. And I kind of chuckle with this because it's like, it's not the government. The U.S. government doesn't have their own choice in this, right? It's all the central banks. They're pretty much running it and they're going to have to go to a new system. So they're, whether it's the Chinese system or the U.S. system, the World Economic Forum system, you know, will we own nothing and be happy? You know, there's so many different directions and they're all fighting for control. So this is going to be a wild decade ahead for sure.
What's up, freaks? Do you have a credit card? Are you getting cash back or airline points or points for some other service? Guess what? Those are shit coins. You want to be stacking Bitcoin. And I have some groundbreaking news for you. The team at Fold has finally released the Bitcoin Rewards credit card. They have a wait list. Going to be distributing the cards later this year. So you want to get on the wait list. Fold Plus members are going to get unlimited 2% Bitcoin back on this credit card. If you get on the wait list, they're up to $200,000 in prizes they're going to be given out. So get on it as quickly as possible. Go to tftc.io/fold and get on the wait list there. If you're on the wait list, you have the potential to win some of the prizes. Check it out. What's up, freaks? This rip of TFTC was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They make the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet, the most secure hardware wallet on the market. As you can see, it's got the BlackBerry form factor, full keyboard. It's got two secure enclaves. You create your private public keys offline. The device never has to go online, never does go online. So you keep your Bitcoin secure. If you have your Bitcoin on exchanges and you're looking to get it off, secure it in the best way possible. Pick up a Cold Card Q. Go to CoinKite.com. Find the Cold Card Q. Use the code TFTC for 5% off. If you're a power user of Bitcoin, like I am, if you're running a business on a Bitcoin standard, if you're just a Bitcoiner who wants to secure your Bitcoin, get the most secure hardware wallet on the market. Go get the Cold Card Q. It's a beautiful thing.
And we love our gold bugs here at TFTC. I think we're ideologically, philosophically aligned and all marching towards a world that stands on sound money, ideally, and whether I think the philosophy behind gold is sound money and Bitcoin is very aligned. And I agree, there's so much fiat built up in this debt-based system that it's going to need to flow into both assets and likely will over time. I think Bitcoin has its advantages to gold, but I think it would be naive to think that there won't be a flow into an asset that has been hard money for millennia. But on this point, like that's why I wanted to have you on, is like, what are your thoughts on what exactly is happening? You mentioned tariffs, or like, there was a theory that people were repatriating gold in preparation for tariffs. I've seen you and many others talk about Basel III, gold being labeled as a tier one asset on bank balance sheets, going live later this summer. Some people have been surmising that maybe it's being repatriated into the U.S. banking system to be used as that asset, to be recognized as that type of asset. And then the other one is there is a recognition that the U.S. dollar as the global reserves currency may be on its way out. And there's this huge reshuffling of the board and people preparing for a transition to whatever the next reserve system may be. Maybe it's a reversion to a gold reserve system, a sort of transition to a Bitcoin standard at some point in the future. But like that, I agree with what you said, this amount of gold moving this quickly across the world is something that I haven't seen in my lifetime. outside of COVID, but COVID was a very was obviously a very unique situation in terms of the you had this pandemic in quotes and the global economy shut down, and that was a very volatile system geopolitically, socially. This time around with all this gold moving is not a very similar situation. It's relatively calm. It's not relatively calm, relatively being the most important word there, but it's not a COVID like situation. So like the impetus for all this gold moving is leaves a lot of questions. Like what is happening?
Yeah. So I'm not going to pretend that I know the exact answer. I'm very much like, what are the clues? Right. And I pin everything on a board and I move it around. And if something proves false, I take it off. That's me. I'm not going to hold a losing position on something. So I'm going to move it around. I would say it possibly could be a little bit of everything. I think, you know, the tariff play, EFP risk, look, banks are in the business of making money and not taking risk or taking as little risk as possible. So if they were in a short position and needing to bring in the physical and you got to put the silver on a boat, or even moving gold isn't done in one day, you got to schedule the flights and all that. So, you know, it makes sense that they would, you know, try to reduce some of that position, move more material into the United States in the advance of tariffs. So that completely makes sense. And there's a lot of money to be made. These guys have been killing it the last number of months. There's no doubt. So, but it keeps going and going and going. You're like, that's where the head scratcher component says, kind of where I think I'm at right now is, you know, if we asked 100 people, does Fort Knox have all of its gold, right? I feel like a lot, and I don't know what percentage, but a lot is probably going to be like, I don't think it's there. My personal take is I think it's there now. So it's quite possible that some of this, you know, especially if we start thinking about how it's looking like what Elon is exposing is we've been looted like for quite some time. He's looking at the fresh stuff, right? I think we go back, the United States has probably been looted to some degree through both sides of the aisle for quite some time. So is it possible that some of this gold was sent out? Was it loaned out? Who knows? I mean, especially if someone's like, we don't need it. No one's auditing it. It's not been audited in 50 years. You know, they did, you know, a quick show and tell into one room, you know, what, in like 30 years ago or something. It's just, so it's quite possible that, you know, Trump is back. Is it possible that, you know, under his, you know, called the new team, the moment he won, he started working with some of the banks to start positioning the material. And so a lot of it's going into the COMEX, but a lot of it's not. But a lot of that's going to the COMEX is someone is standing there for delivery and they haven't taken it out. So there's a big difference between like what's in there and what can actually be pulled out. And so there's someone behind this. And that's where I say it's got to me. I feels like it has to be someone so big. So maybe all the gold, you know, some of it has either moved back into Fort Knox, but obviously the U.S. has other vaults. I mean, I also like to play the odds. Trump does not like to look bad. If he can, and either does Elon, and Elon comes off as so ho-ho-ho, right? That's his shtick. It's like Warren Buffett drinking a Coke and eating candy. He makes you feel like he's just like one of us, but these guys are on a whole nother plane, right? How they work. So I think when Trump says we're gonna go look at it, well, I better hope it's there. Like, I feel like that kind of uncertainty, like, you know, if you knew you had something wrong in your house that you could fix before telling your wife before you got home, like it's the bathroom was flooded. If you could clean it up before she gets home, honey. And then you say, honey, there was a problem, but don't worry. I got it all mopped up. It's cleaned. Our bathroom's good. As opposed, would you rather walk in and it's all flooded and the flooring's a mess? No. So it feels like to me that perhaps there was a problem and they've already corrected it. And then that leads into the whole, you know, Trump's talking about a golden age. And then I know he's talking. He loves gold. I think we can go back decades. Go stay at a Trump hotel, any of them, right? The gold ordained, gold gilded, it's everywhere, right? The artwork, it's there. That's what he loves. So it's no shock. I mean, he even sat down at the crypto summit the other day, right? And he's wearing a gold tie. There's a gold trophy in the middle of the World Cup. I mean, and then he says it's a golden age. It feels like to me this might be a little bit of like he's slow playing us into the word gold. Like it's very mimetic. right? It becomes a meme. And here we are. And, you know, maybe we're not going to have a gold standard, but maybe they're going to do a gold bond, you know, a gold issue bond. Maybe they're just going to put gold on the sovereign wealth fund. Right. And then maybe Bitcoin's on there too. I mean, there's so many scenarios here that I don't know what's happening, but it's clear. I mean, a lot of people didn't catch this, but if you go back and look at Trump's X account, he was warning shots on X to BRICS to not create a competing currency to the dollar and don't back it. I didn't say with what, but I'll let you figure out what it is. I mean, anyone that's studied gold movement knows it's gold. And absolutely the BRICS countries are raging. And we've seen, if I go back over the last couple of years, the Shanghai, the EFP for Shanghai has been higher, which means they're incentivizing people to move metal over to China. So, you know, is it possible, you know, sometimes the best offense is a good defense, and he's just trying to shore up a lot of things, especially, you know, I'm in the camp. We're going to have some hard economic times ahead over the next number of years. Like this. And then Elon even says, if you go back in time, right, be pre-political, right, he was talking about universal basic income or maybe even universal basic needs. So what does that world look like at some point? And so he's, you know, probably, you know, I don't know, what do you think the percentage we're gonna have in the federal government between last year and maybe at the end of this term? We're gonna 90% cut, perhaps? I mean, you could kind of see how, like, the world is changing so rapidly. And then there's the AI movement. Like, if you don't have energy, you can't run AI. If you don't have AI and energy, you can't run perhaps Bitcoin mining. You can't really, it is so, energy is so critical. So you look at what they're doing with nuclear now, they're turning the coal plants back on. Let's go, because if you don't have the energy and the power and you let someone else, whether it's Bitcoin or it's gold, right? Whoever owns the most of anything controls that market. So that's kind of what I'm sensing here, is just there's a lot of changes up ahead. They call it the Great Reset, you know, out of Davos, right? Klaus Schwab, that's not really the best world. And then, you know, they kind of installed the next Canadian guy. You know, it's the same deal. I mean, literally, Justin Trudeau, Schwab was at a conference years ago and says, he is one of ours. We installed him. You know, so there's a high level battle, you know, at the finance level, at, you know, the Great Reset level. And look, at the end, does the little guy, and little guy means just the common, you know, neo-feudalism is rearing its head. And, you know, what does this all look like? I don't know. I just, again, it's kind of wild to watch it. And, you know, just even going back and watching what we dealt with already this decade. So with COVID, and then more importantly, the reaction of what governments did.
Yeah. And completely, I said this on another show 2 weeks ago, to think that they're going to go into Fort Knox, open the doors, there's not going to be gold there. They're going to open it. They're going to be blinded by the light shimmering off the bullion bars, and Trump's going to be like, oh, we actually have more than we thought. To think they would ever publicly signal to the global market, particularly today, that the U.S. is in a position of weakness is completely naive. Like, if they do, who knows? Maybe they don't. But if they do go into Fort Knox, I'm pretty certain that the gold's going to be there.
And back to, but it's kind of the bathroom analogy. They might tell us that there was maybe some missing, but we got it all back. I mean, that kind of, I could see something like that, because obviously the date of the bars are going to be there. And one of the guys on my team a number of years ago, it was more than a decade ago, quoted the U.S. government to refine the gold in Fort Knox. And at the time, because the grade is a little lower, so the industry standard, you know, in theory today is closer to a 4.9 purity. There's some stuff that's like, you know, below that. And so it's not necessary. So all these exchanges around the world, they have different specs. And so sometimes that gold's not interchangeable with each other. But that doesn't mean, you know, at the end of the day, even if you're a percent lower, the gold is still there. So you melt it down, you purify it to whatever spec, you pour it into the size, whatever you want. So that's why I kind of feel like it's been there. And to your point, you know, he's an art of war guy. This is how he negotiates everything, right? And then he, and even, you know, Art of War is like you don't trap your opponent. You give them a bridge to go across that you want them to go across, right? And that's what he's trying to do with tariffs. He's trying to do this with the Ukraine situation. And I still think, yeah, why would he want to look weak on this? Why bring this up literally, what, a few weeks into his term? Like, hey, I don't know the gold's there. Oops. It's just maybe not the mode how someone would go about it.
Sup, freaks. Bitcoin is the ultimate scarce asset. Join Bitcoin macro expert Nick Bhatia at a live online event on March 17th for death, taxes, and 21 million. Learn how to shield your wealth, leverage tax-advantaged accounts, and secure your Bitcoin for future generations. Your financial advisor, accountant, or attorney might not be up to speed on Bitcoin, so invite them to join too. Register now at unchained.com/TFTC. That's unchained.com/TFTC. March 17th, be there.
And I think you alluded to it earlier, but there's been this long-running theory in many gold circles that the price of gold has been suppressed by paper markets and to usually unleash the true price of gold, you need to call it physically and really call bullshit on the people running these paper markets. Have you subscribed to that theory, number one? And number two, if so, does a situation like this potentially lead to a situation where we get a repricing of gold to where these people would argue it should be?
So I'm going to go with facts. Just a couple of years ago, JP Morgan was fined, I believe it was $900 million, for suppressing the precious metals market, right? So were they just spoofing it for their own book, right? Perhaps. So big banks have been involved in manipulating the markets, and they've been fined by the government. So if we go back even further, and I'm trying to remember when it was, some of these same groups were also sued, and they went to court, and the judge ruled that because they were acting on behalf of a sovereign nation that you cannot sue, they dismissed the court case. So I think I take the facts, and I think this was back when I'm trying to think the company, you know what, I'm not going to name it, but some of these companies were taking the opposite side of hedges. So if I go back in time when gold was like 200-300, very often the gold mining companies would hedge because they didn't want to see it drop closer to 200 if we were at 250. So they would hedge their production. Well, some of these trading houses were the ones taking the other side, right? And so they were taking the other side. And basically when that price went down, right, guess what happened to the asset? It was repoed. And so that bank took over those gold mines, right? And they now get the gold. And so I think this is what kind of concerns me, like a MicroStrategy. I realize he says he could go down on anything and I'm fine. But you know what, man? Like, if you do believe Bitcoin's going to go somewhere, wouldn't you like to try to control one of the biggest players that there is? So this is where, like, banks often manipulate, governments manipulate. That's the thing. There's people bigger than the private banks, right? This is, the governments can do whatever they really want to do, right? There's court of law and all these things. But, you know, just history proves this stuff. So, yeah, I would say it's real. I'm not one to say, like you can manipulate on a short term. You can kind of cap it, you know, but long term, price is going to find its zone, especially if now people are competing for it. I think that's what we're seeing with gold. When you have other nations that might not be playing the cap game, right? They're acquiring the real metal. So gold, you know, it's really gone up, and this has not been retail at all. And so my company works with a lot of retail, and it's been quiet for the last 16 months or so. And it's just now starting to activate again. But, you know, so this is pretty much a central bank move. So yeah, this is kind of an interesting time to watch, between, you know, what's going on, with the cap. And you could also say that the ETFs, and I would say this is a paper product, right? Is that a diversion from the physical? And I'm going to allude to what I think could even be happening with Bitcoin, right? Is can you short the futures market? Yep, you sure can. And so gold, the moment we had ETFs and all these other things involved, right, it seemed like gold and silver had a hard time getting out of the gate. It kind of feels like we're seeing this almost like, who in the heck is selling Bitcoin? If Saylor is buying all this nonstop, like, why is it, Why is it going down to the way it is? So I think the tough thing is with the futures market, you know, I would say the possibility of entities doing, let's say, capping games or manipulation games, or and we see this in the crypto market where the leverage gets really high and they just cut the legs out, right? And you have these flash crashes and they gobble it all back up, right? And then the price goes right back up. So, you know, is that manipulation? Probably, but is that just, that's the game we're in. So, you know, I would say to me, if Bitcoin was back where only people held the physical meaning self-custody, it's not on someone else's balance sheet, right? It's on the blockchain. I think Bitcoin would be higher. I realize there's a lot of capital that's come in through the ETFs, have come in through MicroStrategy due to regulation and whatnot. But, you know, I think it's almost, you know, it's the same thing with precious metals. So much has gone into the physical, but it's a paper product. And if you read it, they could have derivatives, right? It could be, you know, I'm not here to poke holes in anyone's product. But these are some of the banks that have been involved in various activities in the past. So I think it does lead you to believe it's possible.
Yeah.
Totally. In the area, anybody out there listening, get your Bitcoin off the exchange. Make sure you do it right. Make sure you understand how to properly secure your Bitcoin. Maybe get a cold card or something like that, a hardware wallet to do it. But I completely agree. I think that's one thing that does play to Bitcoin's benefit is still to this date, like the way that Satoshi launched the protocol, like he distributed a bunch of the supply in the early years at a point in time where you were essentially forced to self-custody. So as it stands today, I believe more than 50% of Bitcoin that is on the market is held in self-custody, but that number can always go up. But we don't have to belabor that point. I think another interesting sort of detail to point out here as it relates to what's happening in the gold markets, and if we are repatriating a lot of this gold, is Treasury Secretary Bessent, who historically has been really into gold and has gold as a core part of his portfolio, or at least before he was, when he was managing a portfolio before he became Treasury Secretary. And he's spoken openly over the last 18 months about this need for a monetary reset, a Bretton Woods 2.0 or a Plaza Accords type situation where everybody gets to the table and we agree that the fiat system has gotten out of control and we need to sort of come to a restructuring agreement of how the global monetary order operates, which is interesting.
Yeah. No, that's a really, really good point about that. So, and when you assemble a team, right, of like-minded people that are all trying to achieve the same goal. Yeah. I think that the hint is there. Yeah.
Yeah. And what you mentioned, there could be economic turmoil on the horizon. You think that's a likelihood. Do you think it's necessary short-term pain for a resetting that gets the global economy, the U.S. economy specifically, back on more stable footing to move forward? Yeah, or
so good. Yeah, so the U.S. government's got to renegotiate its debt, right? Trump has been, and Bessent had been very vocal, to the point where I think Bessent finally said, okay, I'll stop talking about it. But they made as their point, right? I want rates lower. Well, why? Stimulate the economy, right? I feel like what they're actually doing with, let's say, axing capital flow within the government. The federal government is such a big part of our GDP, our economy, the movement, right? It's a little bit deflationary. Totally. It really is. And now tariff, I'd say the uncertainty, companies don't know if they need to hire or fire, right? It may impact your business in an amazing way. It may cripple it. So I think right now, you know, we're in a situation where companies don't know what's going on. They're not spending money. They're not doing projects and they're not hiring a lot. And so it definitely feels like to me that if you're Trump, would you rather this thing just crash out a little bit in the beginning and then build it back? I'd say that's possible. The other thing that's happening is China is exiting the NASDAQ. So, you know, other governments are invested in stock market, right? So the Swiss are invested, China's invested, and I think it's been pretty vocal that China, I think we've been telling them to get your money out of our system. I feel like companies at a very high level are also being told to deleverage from China. Meaning this is not just tariffs, right? We haven't said that China's our enemy, right? It's been Russia. It's been, and Trump's kind of changing the board right now. But we're so integrated with China. It does feel like they are pulling out capital themselves out of the U.S. And so, you know, our multiples, like you just look at the S&P, all the price earning ratios are at historic highs. It doesn't even make sense.
It makes no sense.
How? And so this is where I say there's so much fluffy money in this. This isn't you and I and families with their 401ks just putting money in. This is so much money was printed and put in. And so our global world, like we've been in globalism for quite a while. We're now deleveraging all that. And so this thing could just, you know, poof and just let it get chaotic and you rebuild from there. And that's frankly, that's Trump's MO. You know, he walks into a room and you don't negotiate when everyone's sitting at their table and feeling happy. He makes everyone feel really uncomfortable and just disrupts the entire room and everyone doesn't know what chair they're supposed to sit in. And he's like, you know, you're going to sit there and you're going to take that rate. And this is what we're going to do in trade. And in the end, it's funny. People even talk about already, you know, Trump's capitulated on tariffs and such. This is how he negotiates. And they have said, and they've been saying that we might have to go through a period of detox. Yeah. What does that mean? Detox. So I would say we could be facing some pretty headwinds, and it may not be comfortable for a lot of us. And yeah, I think it could be at moments tragic, even what could happen.
This is something that this is what got me into Bitcoin. I'm a child of the great financial crisis. I was a senior in high school in 2008 when everything went to shit. Studied economics in college and really went to college with like a know your enemy mindset. Like, how could it get this messed up? And I think TARP and the bailouts really rubbed me the wrong way. And I think you can make the argument this is a detox and some harsh medicine that it seems like Trump and the team that he's assembled are willing to take, and this should have happened 16, 17 years ago, arguably, you can go all the way back to the 70s. And it's necessary. It is going to be very tumultuous if we are going through a detox period here. However, in the long run, it will be massively beneficial, particularly for the common man, because if you look at the markets that this detox is most likely going to affect, it is equities and assets like real estate that are a lot of the wealth is held in, but that wealth is controlled by a minority of individuals in the United States. And so it's going to suck for them. If you own debt, if you own these assets, your wealth is going to come down considerably, but for the flyover states, the Rust Belt, Main Street, whatever you want to call it, it's a necessary resetting. And if it is deflationary, makes things more affordable. And I think Trump, at least from my observation, it seems like he's trying to choreograph and really be somewhat communicative about this, which I think is completely necessary. Is you're going to hear and see headlines about the mainstream media and a lot of people in high finance kvetching about markets falling and Trump being a terrible president. But I think really getting out there and communicating, hey, this is necessary medicine to get to a more stable foundation to build from is important.
Yeah, I think... So my company's name is Scottsdale Mint, so it has the word Scottsdale in it. But I started just over 4 years ago to move it to Wyoming. So I'm now in Wyoming. We moved our old staff up over the last number of years, kind of preparing for this event. Our facility's even in a foreign trade zone. And so we're essentially our vaulting and manufacturing operation. We're within a free port. And a lot of people were like, well, what does that mean? Because we're a free trade society. If you look back, the Great Depression was the Smoot-Hawley Act. And that's when the U.S. had 25 to 50% tariffs. a lot of people can look back, critics of it would say, you know, even though they put it on to reshore jobs and to create economic activity with factories and everything, it kind of delayed the economic recovery and it extended that depression. But there's other critics that say, was it done on purpose? And then was it done on purpose to allow a monetary financial transition? So if you got to think that time of the world, right, we were also moving, kind of the system was moving from European control into a United States. So they kind of put everything on ice. I'm not saying I thought this was going to happen this quick, but here we are. And so we're talking about the same things that we did during the Great Depression, which is, again, if you know, for those fourth turning book guys out there, right, you know, every 80 years. So here we are. Here we are with tariffs. And so I do think we're going to be faced with some really, really interesting, hard times. And so, you know, building a company that is able to hold assets like artwork, if there's tariff on art, right, we can bring it in. It could be showcased, held here, or other assets if it gets tariffed. And so, you know, this is yeah, it's kind of, and Wyoming's a little bit of it's a rugged place to live. Not a lot of people live in Wyoming, but a lot of blockchain companies are here, right? It's got some of the best property rights. That's where almost every crypto custody company out there is now based in Wyoming. Obviously, Cynthia Lummis is pushing it. And so I think through the destruction, to your point, there's going to be hard times, but there's also going to be some potential good times too that come out of it. And I think for those that are positioned for it, maybe have deleveraged in, let's say, the old school finance stuff, and they're maybe more positioned for what's coming. And I'm a big fan of, like, you know, that's where, you know, maxi on anything, I feel like, is especially, I get, like, you're a young kid, you got 10 bucks to your name, you know, you walk into a casino, you put it all in black, right? There you go. And you hit it, you lose it, no big deal. But as you get older in life, you've got a family, you have assets, you know, so at some point, and I have a lot of friends they have so much Bitcoin and Ethereum, a lot of them, both, that they can never really sell it without moving the market. And yet they still diversify, right? And they still hold it. They diversify along the way and they reposition. So I think that's kind of the world we're in. It's not, I'm not a doom and gloom guy. I'm optimistic, but let's be frank. The public's not going to find out on anything until it's kind of too late. Like, did they tell you, hey, buy Amazon stock? It wasn't very easy. Buy Apple. I mean, how many people bought it and held it? I mean, that's even when you look at Bitcoin, it's up so much, but how many people have held the whole way through, right? Not a lot. And, you know, I even look at guys like, so people that got me into it, I won't name a few names, but like a Roger Ver, right? He was, you know, Bitcoin Jesus, right? And kind of got defamed because he was very concerned about Bitcoin. He did, and you know, Bitcoin, he didn't fork it himself, but Bitcoin Cash, he was a big proponent of that. But I don't know if he ever sold his Bitcoin. So in theory, he might be the largest holder of Bitcoin in the world. And you watch what just happened to him a few months ago. He wrote the book, How Bitcoin Got Hijacked, and he was arrested by Interpol a few days later. I actually think he might be still one of the largest holders of Bitcoin.
I wouldn't be surprised a lot either.
It's possible. It's possible. So, man, and he was an Austrian economics guy. So I maybe wasn't as brilliant as him. He was in gold and silver, so was I. I think I was on a website to buy Bitcoin when it was $1.40. And you know what I said to myself? I said, this feels like World of Warcraft, people. It feels like Magic the Gathering. This way, it's like, and
it was at that point.
That's what it was. And I said, you know what? This isn't for me. So I wasn't that smart. I didn't get into it till a number of years later. But yeah, it's an interesting time. But I think it's also an opportunity. This is probably the greatest opportunity for people of all ages to say, hey, how am I going to strike out for whatever's coming ahead? It's a wonderful time. There's so much change, right? Volatility. You know, when things are stagnant, you can't really move. So things are going to be really, really volatile, be breathtaking. So I think for those that are paying attention and positioning and trying to work on things, hopefully you can come out the other side and take care of your family, your friends, and other people. So, you know, it's It's a, you know, it's not all about like just, hey, I'm going to be the next king, right? There's a component there of like, I would say if you've been blessed with knowledge and information and you are then blessed, like you're a steward of that asset to take care of people. That's kind of some of my mindset. Create jobs for new people, create things, do things. And that's where I think, you know, you look at a lot of things. There's going to be so many new opportunities. While AI might exit a lot of stuff that doesn't need to be in existence anymore, there's going to be new opportunities, hopefully, for people that have the skill set to kind of go forth.
I completely agree. And I think this fiat debasement, this fake fiat world that we've lived in has really paralyzed people from going out and doing these productive things. And so while there may be some volatility on the horizon, hopefully it like rejolts individuals into like, oh, maybe I should go start a company, create jobs, be productive. And once you reintroduce opportunity costs to the market, like that actually becomes incentivized. And so, I mean, on that note, last question, considering everything that we've discussed, it seems like people are wholly convinced that what Trump and Bessent are doing right now, they're letting the stock market go. They're trying to get the 10-year yield down so they can refinance. And by letting the stock market go, hopefully incite the Fed to lower interest rates, begin QE again. Do you think that is a foregone conclusion? Do you think that is a strategy? Do you think that will happen? Or is this sort of repatriating of gold that we're seeing a signal that there's another option on the table that they may be going for, and maybe the market consensus of the Fed stepping in at some point this year, driving rates to zero and blasting QE again, doing the same old thing that we've done since 2008, is misguided?
Yeah, I'm probably going to differ for a lot of people that are falling in the gold camp. I don't think anything's going to happen tomorrow. A lot of people are like, this is it. This is all happening. I view this as, I think it's a journey. So we may not get an audit of the U.S. gold. It might be 6 weeks. It might be 6 months. It might be never, right? And so this, it actually could go quiet in theory. So I do think he is, I think on the table right this minute is probably the interest rate component, right? Trying to shake around roll. We just saw today, inflation number is down, right? So the table's now being set to so that Powell could, in theory, justify some downward revisions. And so, you know, if you started to create a little bit of volatility, right, and we've already seen it in the NASDAQ and the S&P, right, things aren't, you know, money's kind of being liquidated. And normally it all runs to dollar, and it's kind of been interesting. Gold's held really strong, which a lot of times, and it still could get, it'll have moments it gets whacked like everything else, but it's actually held very strong, even despite this volatility just in the last week. So I'm kind of in the camp of somewhere in between here. It's probably a journey, not an overnight thing. It's just he's still fighting things. I'm guessing internally the government is probably a beast to work with, and he's probably trying to figure out who his partners are. So it's possible that he's just, you know, kicking Mexico and Canada in the nuts and basically like get your house in order, because these guys are. I mean, Mexico's fairly narco run, right? I mean, how many people ran for office and were knocked off before the one that's in office? And so the question is where does her alliance? And I think Canada feels like it's
Trudeau-ish.
Yes, indeed. And I think this, like, no one voted for this guy. He holds three passports. He's from the Bank of England, by the way, I believe. So yeah, very Davos-y. So I think that scenario here is, yeah, I don't know, like, the Axis allies of whether that's a kinetic war or it's an economic thing. Like, the table could change a little bit here. And Europe's kind of going alone for the moment. Like, they want to take on the army of Europe and let's go after Russia. Well, I don't know.
I'm down to cup A with Europe. They don't really look like they're aligned with our values these days. In terms of-
I think that's been for a long time, right? And you know, look, not that Putin's an amazing guy, but to say that it was all him and not, I mean, the whole thing's been fabricated and created, and it's been a proxy war for a number of years now. So the moment someone puts boots on the ground, And I'm going to go with this as another factor. In the moment, like, let's say the UK, Starmer's been saying, you know, it's time. We may need to send troops in. Well, the moment that is, you're now a target risk for a bomb, right? And so some of those, that asset that's flying out of London, right, it's a risk factor. And so does the UK really have the ability? No. So, yeah, the US doesn't want that war either. So it's, but some groups do within the United States. They want war. That's just, you know, on both sides of the aisle. A lot of people don't want peace. There's so much money to be made through a lot of this activity. So, yeah, it's, sorry, I got off tangent a little here. It's just, there's so much happening that the news is, I love it. I'm not an economist. I'm kind of in it in a weird way. I'm not any special guru. I've just been around a long time in this space. I see things. And then I talked to smart people like yourself that just we're all putting pieces of the puzzles together and talking and trying to have good conversation.
Yeah. Well, thank you for hopping on X and giving your perspective. I find it extremely fascinating. And gold, obviously, I'm a Bitcoin guy. I've been in Bitcoin for 12 years and have had many people who are in gold on for years throughout the years. But the last time we really talked about this physical gold movement was in 2020. So I'm really happy that you came on to give a breakdown of that.
Thank you. Yeah, don't let Peter Schiff give that the whole gold community. I'm probably kind of a little bit of an oddity here. I've just been in the space. I own digital art. Some has done amazing, like ridiculously amazing. Some of it went to nothing. I like to just be part of like what's going on in culture, what's happening out there. But I also love the physical art. So I feel like you could do the digital things and you can own the physical things and they can have fun with both. So yeah, it's going to be an awesome ride ahead.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Stay frosty out there, freaks. Josh, thank you for coming on. Hopefully we can do this again at some point in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Marty.
All right. Peace and love, freaks.
Okay.